Hello, and welcome to another episode of Artifacts. I am your host, Rachel Wilson. I just returned from participating in an amazing teacher institute at Monticello, Thomas Jefferson's home in Virginia. For the next couple of weeks, episodes will be centered around artifacts found at Monticello, and I'll share with you bits I learned and researched. This episode comes at the suggestion of a sweet listener and new friend, Laura from Florida. She enjoyed the pencil episode and suggested more school supply episodes. So Laura, this episode is for you. Have you ever gone to Dr. Google looking for an answer to a burning question, only to find yourself hours later in an Alice in Wonderland experience, miles of tabs past your first one? That's how this artifact worked out for me. It started out so straightforward, so simple. I had plenty of material until it took me to mummies, wasps, and recycling. You'll see. Come join me down the rabbit hole. This episode's artifact is lined or ruled paper. Let's talk for a second about the details of this paper. Did you know that those blue lines have a name? They're called feints. Now, I looked up the morphology of this word feint because it is spelled F-E-I-N-T. In my mind, I'm seeing a purple couch, a woman across it with her hand over her forehead. Oh, but that's not this kind of feint. I really didn't find any information about the word and where it came from. But I did learn that feints have been blue since the early 1800s. Loose leaf, meaning unbound paper, the way we see it in our classrooms today, was invented in 1914. Among Jeffersonian documents I was able to see while I was visiting the special collections at the University of Virginia, I noticed that several letters were written on either lined or graph paper. Those documents got me thinking about rolled and graph paper for an episode. Now, coordinate paper or graph paper was expensive in the late 1700s. In fact, we were told at UVA that Thomas Jefferson brought back this paper from Europe and he treasured it. He did, however, share a bit of it with astronomer and inventor David Rittenhouse. In a letter to Rittenhouse dated March 19, 1791, Thomas Jefferson writes, "I send for your acceptance some sheets of drawing paper, which being laid off in squares representing feet, or what you please, saves the necessity of using the rule and dividers in all rectangular drafts, and those whose angles have their sines and cosines in the proportion of any integral numbers. Using a black lead pencil, the lines are very visible and easily effaced with Indian rubber to be used for any draft. I am, dear sir, yours affectionately, Thomas Jefferson." I have included links to samples of Thomas Jefferson's drawings and writing on my blog so that you can see for yourself that this paper hasn't really changed since the 1700s. Or has it? Today, lined paper is available in three widths: narrow, college, which is considered a medium width, and wide. I don't know that I've ever seen narrow, so I had to look up the difference between narrow and college. The difference is only 1/32nd of an inch. I found out that lined paper has been around for a long time, but until 1770, the lines had to be drawn on by hand. On June 15, 1770, John Tetlow, an Englishman, secured the first patent for a lined paper ruling machine, which he named after himself. Before the 1800s, paper was made from cotton and linen or flax rags. Linen was considered more valuable than cotton and therefore cost more. I thought it was interesting that we were already recycling back then. I came across an ode of sorts written in the 1700s by an anonymous author that reads, "Rags make paper, paper makes money, money makes banks, banks make loans, loans make beggars, beggars make rags." What event do you suppose brought the need for new materials in the papermaking industry? We'd been making paper from rags for quite a while. I'll fill you in after a brief break. Before the break, I asked, what event do you suppose brought the need for new materials in the papermaking industry? If you said the Civil War, you are correct. Demand for paper went through the roof, as did the cost during the Civil War. At the time, there were more newspapers in America than anywhere in the world, and we had a war to cover. So the research of this led me down some interesting paths. For a time, there seemed to be this quote-unquote rag war. By the 1850s, the U.S. was importing more and more rags, and Britain was struggling to get their hands on enough rags. England's Parliament got involved in 1855 and agreed to lift their duty tax on imported rags, but with a compromise, and that was a higher tax for exported rags. Apparently, not all rags were created equal, and depending on the type of material, the color, and staining, the price was set accordingly. So as a result, the U.S. started importing fewer rags from England. Other countries began to follow suit and either heavily taxed their rag exports or even forbid the rag exports altogether. Now this is where it gets interesting. I read some articles and did some digging on the internet and found some claims that the U.S. started importing Egyptian mummies in order to use their linen wraps for paper. Well, let's take a look at that for a moment. What do you suppose is responsible for the sudden interest in Egypt? First, Napoleon ignited interest in Egypt due to his campaign in Egypt and Syria from 1798 to 1801. With that campaign came the discovery of the Rosetta Stone. It's an accepted fact that mummies were brought to the United States in the 1800s. They were often put on display as a curiosity, and kind of gruesome and sad, there were mummies that were ground up to be used for medicinal purposes, and a brown paint called Egyptian brown or mummy brown. I asked around, and some of my friends said they remember catalogs advertising ground up mummy material that you could buy. But there appears to be no concrete evidence that mummies were actually used for paper, you know, such as a mill's receipt for Egyptian mummy rags as a supply. There doesn't seem, at least at this time, to be any paper artifacts that have been proven beyond a doubt to be made from mummy rags. And some of what I read brought up a good point. It would probably be very difficult to really analyze paper and break it down to really know if it came from a mummy rag. If you want to read more about this topic, I did include some links to some research that I looked at on my blog. Some credit an entomologist, Rayamour, who was a Frenchman, with the idea of using tree pulp to make paper. An entomologist is a person who studies insects, and Rayamour observed wasps chewing wood into fine bits to make their nests and wondered if, hey, maybe this would work for paper. But it wasn't until the 1800s that paper began to be made from trees. Today, the largest producer of paper is the International Paper Company, headquartered in Tennessee. This company was founded by Hugh J. Chisholm in 1898. Today, paper is made from softwoods, such as pine, spruce, and fir, as well as hardwoods, such as poplar, beech, and maple. Paper is a renewable commodity. Renewable meaning it's a natural resource that can be replaced, and commodity meaning a product that can be traded, bought, or sold. I learned that trees are grown for the very purpose of papermaking. This is called managed timberlands, where trees are treated like a crop, just like soybeans or corn are treated here in Wisconsin. More trees are planted than cut down. Many times, paper is made from the leftover scraps from sawmill operations that make lumber. According to an EPA report, which I did link in my blog, the U.S. recycles about 63% of the paper we use instead of sending it to landfills. But that doesn't really let us off the hook. It got me thinking, what about the energy used to produce the paper? What about the process of recycling? How about the emissions from transporting paper for recycling? According to greenamerica.org, paper and wood products account for over a quarter of all solid waste in U.S. landfills, releasing methane while they decompose. I don't know about you, but learning about paper this week has made me think a little bit harder before I hit that print button. It also got me thinking about all the ways we use paper today. Of course, we use it in the classroom, and I think many of us are trying to reduce the amount of paper that we're using by going a little bit more digital. But think about it. Beyond paper in school, think about how many times you're given paper as a receipt. You go to a fast food place and you get a receipt and it blows off into the wind. You go to the pharmacy and you get a receipt that you could wrap yourself up in. Lots and lots of paper in our society still, and lots more work to be done. I do find it interesting that recycling is not a new idea. It's been going on for a very long time. Well, it's time to end this episode. You can find my sources and resources on the blog, artifactspodcast.home.blog. I did include a link for a paper recycling engineering lesson that would work for most grade levels. In fact, it even says on the website that it's designed for K-12, so I wanted to make sure that I let you know that it's there for you. Feel free to email me at artifactspodcast@gmail.com. I enjoy hearing your feedback, and I would love for you to share with me any topics that you'd like to hear about or questions that you have that I can research. And I'm already looking forward to the next episode, which will include my Monticello Teacher Institute reflections, as well as those of my colleagues, because it was just such a special time. As always, thank you for listening.